Chapter 10.
Verpine negotiator Sas Sekili, speaking today at the opening of BASTEX, has warned Mercana that the Roche government will respond with appropriate measures if it continues to breach trade agreements on technology exports. Mercana is keen to move into the growing market for secure small-unit comlink networking, a field dominated by Verpine products.
HNE Business News, noted with interest by Boba Fett, Mandalore. Speeder Park, Rotunda Zone, Coruscant. Lumia had left a magnified wake in the Force, like a water speeder on a lake. While it was generous of her, Mara wasn't amused.
"I didn't get stupid overnight," she muttered. "Don't insult me, Tin Can."
"And what were you saying about Luke being too close to all this?" Jaina asked.
"Deep breaths, Aunt Mara, deep breaths." "I'm psyching up. I find it helps. You use the Force your way, and I'll use it mine."
"Wow. Am I calming you down now? That's a headline to save for the grandchildren."
Mara paced a 10-meter square of the area, feeling dark energies pulsing like shockwaves. Jaina stood back and watched.
"She's taken off from here," Mara stated.
"Has she led us here to divert us from somewhere else on Coruscant?"
"She's got a narrow range of targets, Jaina. Ben or Jason, or even Han and Leia, if she's teamed up with Alima. Your parents aren't on Coruscant, and if she's after Jason, she must have had her chance to take him when she got into GAGHQ to grab Ben's boots."
Mara squatted down to touch the permacrete. She expected to get a jolt of some kind, a taste of Lumia mocking her. But there was something disconcertingly benign about the impression the Sith had left behind.
"Yes, like she managed to convince Luke she meant him no harm."
Lumia seemed to have discovered a rare talent for Force acting.
"If she's after Luke, she's passed up two chances now."
"So it's Ben?"
"Ben's away. He's not on Coruscant."
Jaina looked at Mara with an expression that said she couldn't work out why Mara was stalling her. But Mara wouldn't budge. The less the family knew about Ben's situation, the better. Sooner or later, it'd slip out that she'd put a trace on him. And however old he was when that finally happened, she'd lose his trust forever. It would hurt him.
"GAG business," Mara said, answering the unasked question.
She cast around in the Force, groping for anything that said Lumia was heading for Vulptor. But she had no sense of that at all. What she picked up was Ben, nervous for a moment, then disappearing as Jason must have taught him. She'd have to tackle that when the current emergency was under control.
"Okay, if she wants me to follow her, I'll follow.
Let's call in Zek and Jag, because I'm betting Alima's in town again, and
no offense, Jaina, but I think it's me she wants. You go find Bug Girl."
Jaina's pursed lips looked like she'd decided to swallow an argument.
"Okay," she said at last.
"It's just an old dark side feud."
Mara didn't want Jaina to feel that she was snubbing her. Relations were edgy enough at the moment.
"Let's not allow her to divert both of us."
So Lumia was taunting her.
"I can get at your husband. I can get at your son."
If she was so set on killing Ben for the death of her daughter, she still seemed to be missing chances. So what did Lumia want from her? Mara returned to base to find one of the ground crew waiting patiently by her allocated XJ-7. She climbed into the cockpit and started her instrument check.
"Is Lumia really a Sith?" the technician asked.
The very last of her kind, said Mara, not asking what he'd heard and how he knew the name anyway. She felt a pang of guilt at her sloppiness for arguing loudly and forgetting there were other personnel around. She sealed the XJ-7's hatches. I'll make sure of that. Mara ignored military air traffic regulations and circled over the area where she'd last picked up Lumia's powerful wake. If she concentrated, it was relatively easy to follow, and she found herself leaving Coruscant orbit on a bearing for one of the moons, Hesperidium.
Oh, yes, Palpatine loved that place,
she said aloud.
You heading there for old time's sake?
Lumia was definitely playing a game, but she wasn't stupid enough to think she could offer Mara her hand and find it still intact like she had with Luke. The wake led to Hesperidium's main resort, which wasn't quite as splendid as Mara recalled. She wondered if it was feeling the pinch of post-war recovery, and if there still weren't enough tastelessly wealthy folk to go around. Port traffic control was surprised, to say the least, to find a military vessel on its scanners.
I need to put down for a while, Mara said,
knowing they had no choice about the matter. They could hardly stop her landing.
Getting weird readings on my instruments. I have to check it out.
Let us know if you need help, the ATC controller said. We pride ourselves on doing anything and everything for all our visitors.
Classified,
Mara said, and ended the conversation in the way that only she could. When she landed and saw the selection of vessels standing on the private strips of the hotels, she realized that an XJ-7 probably looked like an eccentric billionaire's toy, and a small one at that. Some of the craft here were staggering in their size and opulence. She wondered how they even managed to land. There was clearly a thriving class of the ultra-wealthy that had come through the last decade pretty well unscathed, and life was going on uninterrupted for them now, regardless of another war. Credits seemed to operate like deflector shields. If you had enough of either, nothing could touch you. She checked around her, in the force and visually, before sliding out of the cockpit and jumping to the ground. At least she'd managed to dress like eccentric wealth, and few would look at her. Yes, there were definitely some bizarre-looking flying palaces here. And then she felt darkness touch her shoulder in the brilliant morning sunshine. It was so tangible, so dense, that she spun around with her hand on her lightsaber hilt, expecting to find Lumia ready to swing at her. But there was nobody.
You want to play games?
It was early. A couple of hotel guests in sports clothes jogged by and glanced at her, but ran on. She prowled between the vessels on the strip, feeling the darkness pressing on her sternum like a coronary. Something dark was here, and that meant Lumia. The crushing sensation in her chest was getting so powerful that she ignited her lightsaber's blade, ready to fight when she rounded the next hull.
This is it, Lumia. No more games.
She sprang into the gap, lightsaber humming. Staring back at her wasn't a veiled figure with a light whip, but a single disembodied flame-red eye 10 meters wide. Her instinct said it was alive, an alien being, but it was clearly a ship of some kind. And that meant only one thing. Lumia was inside. It was a trap. Mara was sure of that.
Fine. But sometimes traps swallow prey that's way too big for them.
She looked over the hull for a hatch, but the roughly textured surface, was it stone, was unbroken.
Come inside.
Mara wondered why she was thinking that, and then realized the thought was actually a voice inside her head.
in the fabric of the Force itself. It was inanimate, yet sentient, and it wasn't a droid. It was the ship. Mara concentrated hard on sensing Lumia, but she could detect nobody inside the vessel. Suddenly, an aperture appeared in the hull, and a ramp extruded. It was too tempting, and she was too old a hand at this kind of game to walk straight in, but she had to know what was going on. The wake ended here. Lumia had used this ship. But I can take her. This is all mind games. I'm not falling for it. If Lumia was waiting within, hiding somehow, then Mara would kill her. If she wasn't, then Mara would sit and wait for her, and kill her then. It was all the same to Mara. She didn't have anything more urgent to do right then. She placed her boot on the ramp and took a few cautious steps, lightsaber held two-handed. If the hotel had security cams and could see what was going on, it was just too bad. Mara felt bewilderment that wasn't hers.
"You're not who I expected."
It was the ship again. "What do you mean I'm not who you expected?" No, she didn't need to speak. She realized she could think back at this thing.
"You are very similar."
"Thanks. Thanks a bunch." Maybe the ship had a high regard for Lumia. Mara decided that it was as good a source as any of information. She thought her next question, not even in words, but in concepts and attitudes she thought she'd left behind a long time ago. The mental conversation left a taste in her like being a hand again.
"Where is she, ship?" "The other one? Close by."
"You're a thing of the Sith, aren't you?"
"You know darkness well. Better than the other one that I expected to see return."
Mara didn't know what to make of that, but right then she was prepared to accept that her intent was far more malevolent than Lumia knew how to be. She wanted destruction. She wanted obliteration.
"Last of your kind, Lumia, and about time."
Mara hesitated on the brow of the ramp. She thought for a minute that she might be pulled in, and the spherical ship would then trap her inside and make a run for it. She took the precaution of reaching inside with one hand to place the last of her tiny transponders, her only remaining gadget from her previous existence, just inside the hatch. It attached to the oddly stone-like coating she could feel within. At least, if that happened, someone might trace her. And if Lumia ever returned to the ship, the transponder would report her position every time Mara's emitter pinged it. Mara took a cautious breath and lowered her head to look inside. The ship really was empty. Not just devoid of crew, empty. There was nothing within the hull. No cockpit, no instruments, no systems indicators, nothing. It was hollow, lit by a red glow as if there were a fire burning steadily behind the bulkheads. She hadn't seen that light from the outside. And that was as far as she got. She felt something coming, and she knew what that something was. She took a few steps back down the ramp and waited, lightsaber still extended. A slim figure in a dark gray suit and veiled triangular headdress stepped into the space between the parked ships.
"Hello, little housewife," said Lumia.
Mara's autopilot kicked in, and she was the Emperor's hand again, silent and focused. There was nothing worth saying anyway. Amateurs gave speeches. Professionals got on with the job. She force-leapt 5 meters at Lumia, slashing down right to left, two-handed. The stroke, all power, no finesse, clipped the Sith's headdress as she sprang back, slicing off a section. Lumia's eyes widened, pupils dilated, but she was already whirling her light whip about her head. The tails crackled and hissed, missing Mara only because she threw all her energy into a force push to slow them a fraction. Mara didn't take that weapon lightly. It was the worst of both worlds. Leather strips studded with impervious Mandalorian iron fragments and tendrils of sheer, raw, murderous dark energy. Mara drew her blaster and rolled under the hull of the ship next to her. The light whip gouged through the durasteel with a shriek of tearing metal, filling the air with the smell of hydraulic fluid, and the spurt of liquid turned into a torrent that began spreading in a thick pool. As Mara rolled clear on the other side of the ship, Lumia landed heavily on both feet and brought the whip down so close to Mara's head that she felt the rush of air on her right cheek like a breath. The crack was deafening. Mara wasn't even thinking when she aimed the blaster. Lumia's whip hand was raised to throw as much weight as possible from the backstroke. A puff of white vapor burst from Lumia's shoulder, and she staggered a few paces.
Metal. Maybe I hit metal.
Maybe she had, because Lumia teetered for a second, but came right back. Mara sprang horizontally from a crouch and cannoned into Lumia's legs with all the power she could muster from the Force. She hit solid durasteel. Blood filled her mouth, but she couldn't feel a thing. Yet. Clinging to Lumia's knees with one arm, denying her the space to swing the whip, she brought her down like a felled tree before smashing her head into the woman's face. And that hurt. Oh, yes, Mara felt that. She'd caught not Lumia's nose, but the cybernetic jaw, and it cut deep into her forehead. Fighting on pure reflex now, part stunned, she killed the lightsaber blade for a second and held the hilt like a dagger, stabbing it down into Lumia's chest before flicking the energy back on. Lumia pulled to the side as the blade punched through flesh. Mara smelled it. She flicked off the blade to pull back again, triumphant.
I've done it. Dead. Dead, you...
But Lumia was screaming. And that wasn't right at all. The scream seared through Mara's spinning head. It was more than sound. It was... Mara scrambled to her knees to look down at what should have been a dead woman, and stared into green eyes that were utterly devoid of any emotion. And then the world darkened like an eclipse.
Maybe I'm the one who's dead.
Something hit her square in the back, pitching her forward onto Lumia. Mara struggled to turn over without letting go of either lightsaber or blaster, but something coiled around her neck and jerked her backward. The light whip was still in Lumia's fist. She could see the thing. She could see it. So what was around her neck choking her? She felt as if she was flying backward at high speed, and then she hit something so hard that it punched every bit of breath out of her lungs and left her gulping for air. A second or two was all it took. Mara lay trying to suck in air in painful, straining gulps, eyes stinging, and saw Lumia's boots run past her face at a stagger, missing her by centimeters.
What's in my eyes? What's stinging?
She raised her hand to rub them, and her knuckles came away red and wet. It was blood. The last thing she saw as she looked up was the orange sphere, that impossible Sith ship soaring vertically into the air and extending webbed veins like living wings. Mara managed to prop herself up on her elbows. She was suddenly aware of the two runners she'd seen earlier, all nice and neat in their crisp white sports gear, staring at her in horror. She summoned what focus she had and concentrated hard.
You've just seen two stunt women performing for a holovid, shot by a hidden cam, she said. You didn't see a fight at all.
We didn't see a fight at all, dear, said the woman obediently.
The man gawped, and then grinned.
Wow! It's amazing how real that blood stuff looks.
Isn't it? Said Mara, and somehow got to her feet, retrieved her lightsaber hilt and blaster, and walked off with as much grace as she could manage. I was sure I'd finished her off. How did I miss? She almost sobbed with frustration and struggled to get into the XJ-7's cockpit, still trying to work out what had jumped her from behind. When she checked her injuries in the reflective surface of her datapad, her face was streaked with blood, her right eye was swelling and closing already, and there was something like a rope burn across her neck. She could see indentations in her skin that looked like a twisted wire cable.
Something like a droid jumped me. A machine, anyway. That's why I didn't sense it.
It was crazy to fly a fighter after a head injury, she knew, but there was no other way back to Coruscant. She fired up the drives, swearing and cursing. She'd had the cyborg witch right there, her lightsaber in her, and she still hadn't killed her.
And I didn't feel any malice from her either, Luke. Just a busted head.
This was going to take plenty of Bacta. Mara lifted the XJ-7 clear and set it on automatic for the homeward leg.
Luke is going to go nuts when he sees me in this state.
Her adrenaline was ebbing, and the pain was making itself felt now. She settled into a shallow meditative trance to speed the healing process.
Why didn't she kill me? She had the chance. I brained myself on her criffing metal jaw.
Then Mara remembered the transponder. She fumbled for the datapad again and activated the search emitter. A yellow blip, no, two yellow blips, showed. One was still on Vulptor, Ben. The other was edging across the grid on her screen, moving away from the core. Lumia.
Gotcha,
she thought, smiling for a second before she remembered her split lip.
Gotcha.
Lumia and her bizarre Sith ship were on a bearing for the Hidian Way node. Either she wanted Mara to follow, or she didn't know about the transponder. It was okay. Mara could take her any time now, and two could play the come-and-get-me game. She leaned back in her seat and concentrated on reducing her ripening black eye. Jason Solo's office, doors closed, GAGHQ, Coruscant. Jason played the recording four or five times before he was satisfied. It was a distorted ground-up shot, the sort that endoscopic strip cams tended to capture, but the soundtrack was clear, and the participants in the meeting were clearly identifiable as the GA Chief of State and the Corellian Prime Minister. There would be no argument that the two men had met, thrown out the GA's entire defense policy, agreed on private terms for a ceasefire without reference to the Supreme Commander or the Senate, and discussed the removal by assassination of Colonel Jason Solo and Admiral Neothel. This was all he needed to justify the next step. He leaned across his desk and tapped the internal comm. Droids didn't mind how many times they were summoned to the office. H, he said, I need you right away.
Certainly, sir, said HM3. The droid took 10 minutes to show up.
When he clunked in, his arms were laden with data pads and even bound flimsy. He'd come prepared for one of Jason's explain-the-law-to-me sessions. Sometimes it was disturbing to meet a droid who could anticipate needs that well. Jason settled for being impressed. "It's time to action the amendment," Jason said. If a droid could have registered disappointment on an immobile face, then HM3 did. His voice left no doubt. He enjoyed going through the finer points of administrative law with Jason, probably because nobody else wanted to hear. The fact that he carried the statutes around with him, rather than simply tapping into the GA networked archive, was a sign of his genuine affection for the law. It was an entity to him, not simply words.
"Let me recap, then, sir."
HM3 laid the armful of legal reference sources on the desk and pulled out his working datapad. "Amend the Emergency Measures Act to include in its scope the GAG's powers to detain heads of state, politicians, and any other individuals believed to be presenting a genuine risk to the security of the Galactic Alliance, and to seize their assets via the Treasury Orders Act."
"That's the one," Jason said. "When might that be enacted?"
"I can circulate it right now, sir, and it becomes effective at midnight. You're very regular about these amendments."
"I've learned a lot about the importance of administrative discipline from you, H."
"Thank you, sir. So many don't."
"And my apologies for dragging you in here for so little."
Even with a droid, humility and gratitude could go a very long way. HM3 gathered up his source data and made for the doors.
"My pleasure, sir," he said.
Jason waited for the doors to close and let out a breath. He steeled himself not to think of Tenel Ka and Alana, because that was a luxury he couldn't afford at this moment. But he missed them so much, especially Alana, that it hurt him to breathe sometimes when he thought of them. Lumia was occupied elsewhere. There was little chance that she'd catch him reaching out in the Force to his family. But he was taking no risks, not now that so many things were coming within his grasp.
"I've got you now, Cal Omus. I've got you, you fool."
At midnight, he would have the legal authority to arrest Chief of State Cal Omus for actions likely to present a risk to the security of the Galactic Alliance. He would notify the Supreme Commander, who was, until 0900 tomorrow, the acting Chief of State in Omus's absence, and who would step into his place if for any reason he couldn't discharge his duties.
"Like when he's arrested for selling us down the river to the Corellians, and planning to assassinate me and Neothel. She's going to love that bit."
It was too late to pull back from the brink now. This had to happen. Neothel knew it was coming, and the promise of power had secured her silence. She needed to take the evidence to Senator Gavli Gasil, chair of the Security Council, to clear her bows, as she liked to put it. Once that nicety was out of the way, she could participate in the coup with a clear military conscience. After that, the next stage would be to settle her in the titular role as Chief of State, while consolidating his own power base quietly behind the scenes. Because he wouldn't be part of that structure laughingly called democracy. It was chaos, pure and simple. It was a glorious word to justify abdication of responsibility by those who could, if they were prepared to make the effort, create a better galaxy for the vast majority. It was a word for finding someone else to blame. Democracy, freedom, and peace. They were all tricks, like words used to train Veermachts to come to heel or attack. They were sounds with no real meaning, nothing definable, just triggers that everyone had been conditioned to think were desirable, tangible things. Peace. Well, Jason could define that. But democracy? Freedom? Whose freedom? And to do what? Freedom was a pretty nebulous concept, when all most beings wanted was an absence of disorder, a full stomach, and some hope that their offspring would have a more comfortable life than they had. Jason rubbed his eyes,
feeling the lack of sleep of the past week, but determined not to doze even for a few minutes. Shevu hadn't called in. Half the job was done. But Jason didn't yet know what had happened to Gedgen. Whatever had happened, Ben had either shot him or missed by now. Jason switched on HNE, expecting a news flash about the assassination, but it was still showing some nonsense about a Holovid star with an embarrassing personal life. There was nothing to do but fill the waiting time with productive work. He opened the comm to Neothel.
"I'm sending you something on your secure data link," he said. "At 1 past midnight, I'll be acting on it. Time your visit to Gasil carefully."
"I think I can manage that, Jason."
"Wait until you see what I'm sending you," he said. "It's rather different watching them carve up our future."
"Let me know 5 minutes before you pay your visit."
Jason leaned back in his seat and waited for the call from Shevu. And he could still feel that Ben was alive, if not well. Charby Spaceport, Vulptor. It was a lockdown. Ben, like everyone else in the crowd, stood still as the Corellian security officer, Ministerial Protection Branch, he guessed, trained his blaster on the crowd.
"Nobody's going anywhere," he said. "This port is being sealed by the Vulptor authorities, and you're all going to be scanned for ballistic residue."
"Why?"
a male voice called from the crowd.
"There's been a projectile shooting," the officer said. "A murder. I want you all to wait, nice and calm, and then we'll check you all out, and you'll be free to go."
"That's going to take hours," someone said.
"Then it'll take hours,"
said the officer, and flicked the charge test on his blaster so they could hear the whirr and see the flash of an indicator bar that said he was ready to shoot.
"I'd really like your cooperation, folks."
The hum of murmurs, gasps, clicks, and other varied expressions of horror and impatience swept across the gathering crowd. Ben's gut was knotted tight. He didn't dare look behind him to see where Shevu and Lekauf were. He could feel their presence, and had a good idea of their positions, but that wasn't enough. He needed to see them. Carefully, he turned around and caught Lekauf's eye. He ambled over to him, slowing down as he passed so it wasn't obvious they were together. He'd need to steer clear of Shevu, too. There was no point getting them all arrested. Ben activated his earpiece and spoke, barely moving his lips to contain the whisper.
"I'm going to find a weak point and get out," he said.
He felt everyone could see the rifle folded under his jacket, even though they all seemed far more interested in what was happening beyond the transparent steel doors to the landing area. Red and blue lights were reflecting off the walls as security vehicles streamed onto the field.
"I can jump anywhere. Open any door, remember. I'll make my own way back home."
"You do that," said Lekauf's voice in his ear, "and they'll know it was a Jedi."
"No force nonsense," said Shevu. "Relax, we'll get around this. Contingency plans, gentlemen."
"I'm covered in trace, sir."
"Jory," said Shevu. He never normally used Lekauf's first name. "Jory, I'm going to—"
"I don't think that's a good use of manpower, sir."
Lekauf was moving toward Ben. He looked grim. "And you're too far from Ben to do anything about it." Lekauf was right next to Ben now. In the crush of passengers and pilots milling around, getting in one another's way, he could press right up against him unnoticed. The lieutenant reached under Ben's coat and grasped the rifle. Ben clamped his arm tight against his side to stop him from taking it.
"What are you doing?"
"Contingency plan,"
Let go, Ben.
You're going to dump it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to get rid of it.
What about the ballistic contamination? You can't dump that.
Announce it to everyone, why don't you? LeCalf was suddenly master efficient again, like he'd been on the practice range, his slightly goofy good humor gone. He stood chest to chest with Ben, and after a two-second, almost immobile tussle that nobody else could see, he loosened Ben's clamped elbow and slid the folded Karpaki under his own jacket. Now stick with the boss. Promise me you will.
You're nuts, Jory.
Yeah, like Grandad. Ben felt utterly useless. LeCalf had to bail him out of this mess. He should have been able to do it by himself.
Some Jedi. Some super soldier.
He wondered how he'd live this down, and also why he was more worried about that at this moment than about taking a life, even a rotten one like Gedgen's. LeCalf moved back along the terminal hall to the central doors that led onto the landing area. Ben went to follow him, but Shevhu stepped into his path casually, as if being rude and careless to a stranger.
"Whatever happens," he said, almost inaudible,
lips barely moving.
"You're to stick with me and follow me unless I get grabbed, and in that case get back to base any way you can."
They'd wargamed a few scenarios in briefings, including getting split up or captured. But this all felt very different now. LeCalf was at the main doors, looking as if he were trying to check where the tourer was. Then, without warning, he grabbed a woman tight around her neck, drew his blaster, and held it to her temple.
"Open the doors!" he yelled. "Open them now, or I blow her head off!"
Pandemonium broke out. People scattered, leaving a clear area around LeCalf. Security officers and the Corellian cops struggled against the tide of bodies trying to get clear, blasters held high. LeCalf was suddenly doing an amazing job of looking red-faced and dangerous.
"How's he going to pull this off? We're surrounded, locked in."
This hadn't been in the briefings. LeCalf was improvising. He had to be. Ben broke away from Shevhu and pushed through the crowd.
"I said open the triffing doors, or you'll be scraping her off the ceiling!"
LeCalf clicked the blaster, and the woman hostage started shrieking, a thin little wail at first that rose into a full-blown panting sequence of screams and yelps.
"You're going to let me board my ship and leave here, and she gets to live. Don't mess with me! Don't criffing mess with me!"
"Just let the lady go," said the officer.
He pushed through and stood at the edge of the cleared floor area.
"Just put the blaster down. Let her go."
"So you can spray my brains all over the terminal?"
"Yeah, as if."
"Kid, this isn't going to do you any good. We can talk."
"Yeah, like you'll have a nice chat with me about Gedgen. I killed the scumbag and I'm proud of it. He was caving into the GA, lining his own pockets. I'm a patriot. You hear? I love Corellia. They ought to give me a medal."
The officer gestured to the security guard at the exit, and the doors parted. Ben watched in horror, unable to move. LeCalf backed out of the doors, half dragging and half carrying the terrified hostage, and made his way laboriously to the tourer. It seemed to take forever. It was a long, long way to struggle with a woman in a headlock, edging backward, followed by a slowly moving knot of police and guards waiting for the first slip that would give them a clear shot at him. Ben wanted to run after him and help, but had no idea what to do. Even if he created a diversion, they were all still trapped one way or another. LeCalf activated the tourer's ramp and backed up it. The woman had stopped screaming and started sobbing.
"Okay, out.
Now!"
Shevhu was right behind Ben, mouth right next to his ear.
and he grabbed his collar in a slow, twisting grip to show he meant business. Slow and calm. Don't waste this. He's bought us time. Ben wanted to yell, but what about him? He didn't, though. He'd already abandoned too much of his training, and this wasn't the way soldiers did it. His legs were shaking under him. LeCouf reached the top of the ramp and shoved the woman down it. The hatch slammed behind him, leaving the hostage crying and screaming on the permacrete. Police rushed forward to grab her. Marksmen moved in to take up positions around the vessel. Now everyone else in the terminal was forgotten, and the Corellian officer ran onto the field, met up with his buddy, and ran for the cordon. "Ben, that's it. Come on." Chevu jerked on his collar, pulling him bodily toward the doors at the south end of the terminal. A little bit of Ben was calculating where they would be placing troops and what their tactics would be for stopping LeCouf from taking off. If LeCouf got a move on, he could be out of orbit and jumping to light speed before whatever excuse Vulpter had for a fleet could get airborne. But the tourer sat on the permacrete, silent, no haze of heat exhaust venting from its jets. He could see it through the transparasteel walls as he moved toward escape, and couldn't feel relief. It dawned on Ben that LeCouf wasn't going anywhere. Maybe the thing had failed to start. Oh, no, no, no! The drive hadn't stalled on him. Ben could feel LeCouf now, terrified, oddly triumphant, and with a strange sense of peace despite the dread. It was the strangest combination Ben had ever sensed in the Force.
"What's he doing, sir? How's he getting out?"
Chevu kept swallowing. Ben saw the lump in his throat bob up and down.
"Has to be done."
"What has to be done?"
"A good cover story."
"I don't..."
"Ben, move it. Now."
Chevu grabbed his arm so hard that it hurt and hauled him across the permacrete to the shuttle. The tourer was now surrounded by police and armed guards. Lines of security droids were clearing an outer cordon and moving back vessels that were parked too close.
"Don't blow this mission. The job's done."
"But Jory's going to be arrested. He can't sit there forever. We can't leave him. And what happens when they interrogate him? 'Cause they're going to find..."
"Ben, shut up, and that's an order. There's nothing we can do."
Ben couldn't believe it of Chevu. He could have struggled free and gone to help LeCouf and...
And what?
He couldn't use his Force powers in public.
He couldn't take on a small army of police.
He couldn't risk arrest and discovery. He still wanted to go to LeCouf's aid. No comrade left behind, that was the rule. Same for troopers as it was for Jedi. Same for every tight-knit group who faced danger together.
"We can't leave him,"
Ben sobbed, and was about to change his mind and let the GA and the Jedi Council sort out their own troubles if he was arrested and found to be Luke Skywalker's son carrying out political assassinations.
"We just can't abandon him."
As he stared brokenhearted at the battered tourer, a massive explosion sent it flying into a thousand fragments, shooting a column of flame and roiling smoke high into the air, almost knocking Ben off his feet. Police scattered. Those who could ran. Some were blown meters. It all seemed to take place in slow motion and silence. And then the sound rushed back in, and time resumed normally. The captain still had a grip on Ben's arm like a vice. Ben's lips moved, but he couldn't hear himself.
"Yes," Chevu said softly, and dragged Ben as he craned his neck to stare back at the wreckage and flames, numb, shocked, and lost.
"Now we can..."